stunned. Sarge looked at him. "Why the surprise, Captain? We already told you all this." "Yeah, you guys told us," Livingston said, "but it's different hearing it from the general." Sarge looked at Fawcett. "You fly all the way down here just to tell us that? Made a special trip just for some gossip?" "This is no gossip, Top. The Russians already have elements here." Sheffield jumped to his feet and exclaimed, "What?" "Sit down, Captain," Fawcett shouted. Sheffield lowered himself back into his chair. Fawcett continued, "We know there are Spetsnaz forces here already. They're doing the same kind of pathfinding work our SF guys do. They're also linking up with federal forces, which is why we're here. We're about to deal with our local group of feds shortly," Sarge said. "That's what I want to know about. I've been moved to SOCOM in Tampa. We've consolidated some assets, and as a part of that, I'm now down here. We're preparing to deal with the Russians. Part of that is we need to take out as many of these federal pockets as we can."
"You say you're preparing to deal with the Russians. What about the Chinese?" Livingston asked.
"The Defense Intelligence Agency has put together a bit of a picture of what's going to happen. We think the Chinese will come in from California, and the Russians will move in from the East Coast. We know for a fact they are staging assets in Syria now. There's also a lot of activity in Cuba."
"What kind of timetable are we looking at?" Sarge asked.
Fawcett shrugged. "We're not sure. We don't have all our intelligence assets, satellites and such, so we don't have the full picture. But we have enough to know they're definitely coming." He looked around the table. "This is a game changer, folks. We're not going to be dealing with a mob of federal goons with small arms and a little armor. These are going to be no-shit-for-real, battle-hardened troops. They've had plenty of combat experience in Ukraine and Chechnya." Sarge swung his foot off the table.
"Well, since you're here with all this hardware, we should put it to good use. We've been planning an attack on the camp, where our local litter of federal mutts are holed up. It was going to be a hard nut to crack, because they're in a pretty big place. But with those whirly birds of yours, we could end it pretty quick."
Fawcett thought for a moment. "I've got other people I need to meet with, but if we could help eliminate this threat now, that's what we need to do." He looked at Livingston. "Can you send someone to get those Apache drivers and bring them in here? We need them involved in the planning of this." Livingston was on his feet immediately and left the room. Waiting on Livingston and the pilots, I asked Fawcett, "So this is turning into Red Dawn?" With a half-hearted laugh, he replied, "You know, we've talked a lot about that very thing in recent days." He looked up at me. "And as cheesy as it sounds, yeah, it's about to go all Red Dawn."
Sarge slammed his fist down onto the table, causing several of us to startle.
"Goodbye, God! I've been wanting to kill me some commie bastards all my life! Shit! I thought I'd leave this earth never having had the chance to kill some."
He smiled and leaned back in his chair.
"Far as I'm concerned, bring it on."
Fawcett looked over at him. "I know you're itching for a fight, Top, but this isn't going to be a cakewalk. We're going to try and keep them out, but if they make it on the ground, then things are going to get pretty hairy."
"Oh, I know. It ain't going to be pretty. But the rules of engagement are going to be on our side. These fuckers are invaders," Mike interrupted him.
"And no quarter will be given." Sarge looked at him and smiled.
"Not an inch."
Dalton cleared his throat.
"I've always been interested in the Russian military. These are some tough bastards. It's not going to be easy. Just ask the Germans."
Sarge rocked his head back over his chair, getting an upside-down view of Dalton.
"That's true. The Russians brutalized the Nazis in Stalingrad because they were on their home turf. They were fighting for their lives, and it allowed them to turn the tables on the Germans."
Sarge looked around the table. "Now, we have the home field advantage."
and we will be fighting for our lives, Fawcett added.
The door opened, and Livingston came in with the two Apache pilots. I recognized one of them, Mark. We'd met on our trip to Camp Riley. He came in and took a seat at the table with the other pilot. Falling into a chair, Mark said,
"Well now, what kind of trouble are you boys in?"
"Shit, you're just lucky we're inviting you to this party," Sarge snorted.
Fawcett sat up.
"All right, let's get down to business. You have any maps of this place?"
The large drawing Mike and Ted made was rolled out on the table, along with a couple of topo maps of the area. The plan we'd come up with was discussed. Fawcett was happy with the initial details. The two Apaches were an ace in the hole. The plan would remain the same with our group, acting as a blocking force on the north side of the camp, and the guard attacking in force through the main gate. The two Apaches would provide cover for the assault from overhead. Mark was doing some calculations on a pad.
"Our fuel is limited, though. We won't be able to loiter long. You guys are going to have to push through the camp hard and fast."
"How much time can you give us?" Sarge asked.
Mark shrugged. "Maybe 15 minutes?
"Shit, that isn't long," Sheffield moaned.
15 minutes is more than enough time, Captain. We can rain some serious hate down on these guys in 15 minutes.
"How fast can you have your people in place?" Fawcett asked. The question caught Sheffield by surprise.
You want to do this now?"
"We're here. You got a better idea?"
Fawcett asked. Sarge pushed his hat back on his head.
"It'll take a few hours to get everyone ready."
Looking at Sheffield, Fawcett asked,
"Your people know their jobs on this?"
He nodded.
"Yeah. We've gone over it already. Everyone knows what they have to do."
Fawcett stood up.
"Then let's get to it. We need to deal with this as soon as we can. We've got some serious party crashers coming, and we don't need crap like this in the winds when they show up."
Looking at Sarge, he asked,
"You got enough IR strobes for your people?"
Sarge looked at Ted. He nodded.
"I think we have enough to mark our positions. There won't be one on every person, but there will be one in every position."
Fawcett nodded.
"Good."
He took a piece of paper from his blouse pocket and tossed it on the table.
"Put these codes in your radios. You'll be able to talk to us. I'll be overhead for command and control."
Ted took the paper and wrote the codes down on a notebook.
"Soon as we get back, I'll set up our radios and do a comm check."
"Roger that," Fawcett replied.
Sarge stood up and looked around the table.
"Things are going to get real interesting later this evening. Let's take care of these assholes once and for all."
Leaving the armory, I ran into Shane and Sean with the PD. The kid Micah was with them.
"What's with all the helicopters?" Shane asked.
"We've got some shit to take care of," Sarge shot back.
"You going after those DHS guys?" Micah asked.
Before anyone could answer him, Sarge replied,
"Hell no! We don't need this kind of hardware for those shitbirds."
I was wondering why he lied to the kid, but also glad. He made me nervous, and I couldn't put my finger on why. I told Sean the prisoners would be returned shortly and to keep them locked up until further notice. We quickly loaded into the truck and headed out of town as the armory became a beehive of activity.
"We need to stop by the plant and tell those engineers to get back to town. We'll need every swinging dick we can get," Sarge said.
Nodding, I replied,
"I'm going to the farm first to let those guys know, too. We'll need to grab Thad and take him home with us."
When we got to the farm, the people there were already gathering at the trucks for the ride back to town. It was getting late in the day, and their work was done. We told Cecil and his security element what was going on. Thad quickly collected his gear.
"I'll be glad when they're gone," Cecil said,
wiping his forehead. With the back of his arm, he added,
"We've got enough shit to worry about."
Sarge snorted.
"It's gonna get worse, Cecil."
Cecil looked around.
"Shit, Top. What the hell are the Russians gonna want with this little hole in the wall?"
"Hopefully nothing, but let's hope they don't find a reason."
Back in the truck, I headed for the plant. Terry and crew were also gathered around one of their trucks. It was quitting time for everyone, except us. Our work hadn't even begun yet. I was still processing what was about to happen. We'd been planning this, but it seemed to be far off, not imminent. There was no denying it now. I pulled up beside the group and leaned out the window. You guys need to get back to town. Looks like we're going to hit the armory as soon as we can get everyone in place.
No shit? Sean asked.
No shit, Sarge barked back. Now get your asses to town.
He slapped my shoulder and told me to go. I pushed the old truck to get us home. Everything was a rush now. I roared through Umatilla, getting curious looks from the people lingering at the old kangaroo. The same happened as we sped through Altoona. Once back at the neighborhood, I stopped at the bunker. Everyone got out. I told them I would meet them back there with Danny and everyone from the house. Thad said he'd go get the girls. Eric and Perez were already at the bunker. Pulling up in front of my house, I jumped out and ran in. The house was empty. They were all probably at Danny's, so I ran over there. Mel and Bobby were sitting on the porch when I ran up. Mel quickly stood up, asking what was wrong.
Nothing is wrong. We just need everyone to come down to the bunker.
Is Danny in there? I asked, pointing at the house. Bobby nodded and stood up.
I'll go get him.
Get anyone in there, I replied.
What's going on?
Mel asked. That general I met with before is in Eustis. They want to attack the Elks' camp to get them out of the way.
Confused, Mel asked.
Out of the way of what?
It looks like the Russians and Chinese are reportedly sending troops here. We want to deal with the DHS guys before they show up. If they show up.
So what you heard on the radio is true?
Nodding, I said, it looks that way. But that doesn't mean they're coming here to Altoona.
I would imagine they're going to be more interested in population centers or where there's some sort of resource they want.
I hope they're not coming here.
Danny came out of the house with Bobby, Mary, and my girls. Leanne asked what was going on. I told them all to follow me to the bunker, and we would explain it. They were all full of questions, but I kept telling them to just wait until we got there. By the time we got back, everyone was there. It was quite the crowd, actually. Sarge hopped up on top of the bunker.
All right, everyone, settle down. I know you're full of questions, but listen to what I have to say before asking any. My friend, General Fawcett, flew in from SOCOM.
He noticed the quizzical looks he got from some.
SOCOM stands for Southern Command. He came to let us know the rumors we've been hearing of Russian and Chinese troops coming here are indeed true. They're coming. Now, it ain't going to be easy for them. Our boys will give them hell. But they'll probably make it here. And there very well could be some special forces types here already.
Jess brushed her hair from her face.
We already knew that. Well, mostly.
That brings us to where we are now. Why we're all standing here. As most of you know, the Elks camp has been taken over by a group from the DHS and some of their lackeys. These are some of the same guys that were running the camp out at the range. We've been planning a raid on the camp. With the arrival of the general, we've moved things up. We're hitting it tonight.
Really? Tonight? Eric asked.
Sarge nodded. Tonight. Teddy's going to lay out a drawing of the camp and go over the plan. Our group will be acting as a blocking force. The guard guys are going to take the hard job of assaulting the camp directly. We're just going to be there to stop anyone trying to squirt out the back door.
Ted stepped up and unrolled the drawing.
All right, everyone. Gather around so we can go over the plan.
As he said that, Doc pulled up in Sarge's war wagon with Jamie. Jamie sat in the buggy and listened to the discussion. Ted and Mike were going over the plan, pointing out the positions we would occupy. As they were covering the plan, Jamie interrupted them.
Who all is going?
Ted looked at Sarge, who in turn looked at Doc. Doc replied with a subtle shake of his head. Sarge looked at Jamie.
I know you want to go.
she swung her legs out of the buggy and replied, "I am going." Sarge walked over to her.
"I know you want to. Hell, I want you to. But you don't want to be a liability out there, do you?"
Jamie huffed. "I am not a liability."
"You're not 100% either. You wouldn't want one of us to get hurt trying to help you. If this thing goes south and we have to run for our lives, what are you going to do then?"
Jamie sat back in the seat, giving up trying to get out of the buggy. She sighed and said,
"You're right. I know it. It just sucks."
Sarge put his hand on her shoulder.
"I know you're a fighter. This doesn't make you any less."
Jamie nodded, but said nothing.
"So, who is going and who is staying?" Ted asked.
I looked at Mel and Bobby.
"You guys want to go?"
Mel shook her head.
"I don't want you to go, much less me."
"I'm going," Leanne said sternly.
"What about me?" Taylor asked.
Shaking my head, I said, "Kiddo, you're in the same boat as Jamie. You need more time to heal." She didn't reply, just looked at the ground and nodded.
"We need every person we can get, but we also have to keep some people here to watch over things," Sarge said.
Pointing people out, I said,
"I think Jamie, Mel, Bobby, Taylor, and Mary are going to stay. They should be able to keep an eye on things."
Sarge looked at them and asked, "Are you ladies good with that?" They nodded in reply.
Sarge tapped the drawing. "All right, then. Let's assign positions. Each position will have two people in it.
The teams would be Jess and Thad, Eric and Fred, Leanne with me, Perez and Ian, Danny and Dalton, Ted, Doc, and Sarge would be together with Mike, manning the Gustav, and taking out any trucks that tried to move."
Sarge looked at Mike and wagged a finger at him.
"You only hit trucks that try to move. Don't go blowing everything up. We're going to need those trucks."
Mike rolled his eyes.
I know, I got it.
"You damn well better," Sarge barked.
Then he looked at Ted.
"You got those radios ready?"
"Let me go back to the house and get them. We'll spread them out as best we can.
Chop, chop."
Doc stepped up on the bunker.
"If anyone gets hit, call out. I'll hang out in the center of our line so I can get to you. Do not try to come to me. I'll come to you. There will be very little medicine during the fight."
"Win the fight first," Mike said.
Mel looked at me. I grabbed her hand and said, "Don't worry." She squeezed my hand. "That's going to be hard not to do." Leaning over and giving her a kiss, I said, "I know." Sarge was glaring at me.
"You two done? Can we continue now?"
Rocking on my heels, I looked around.
"I guess you can continue."
Sarge clasped his hands in front of him.
"Oh, thank you so much."
With the teams established, they were assigned locations. Once everyone was clear on where they were to be, Sarge told everyone to go get ready. The group broke up, and I walked Mel and the girls back home. Little Bit was holding my hand as we walked, and I could tell something was bothering her, eating at her. I gave her hand a little tug and asked what it was. She shrugged, so I tugged her hand again. She looked up at me. Her eyes were red. No tears yet, but they were clearly on the way.
"I don't want you to get shot."
Pushing my carbine around to my back, I scooped her up in my arms. She was getting so big. This wasn't as easy as it once was.
"Don't worry about that. I've already been shot once, and that didn't kill me."
I lifted the boonie hat on my head and turned it to the side so she could see the scar. She reached up and touched it.
"And that one was in your head, too."
I bounced her. "Exactly. I'll be fine." Looking at Leanne, I asked,
"How many magazines do you have for that burp gun?"
She carried a little messenger bag with her all the time. I guess it was kind of like a purse, only this one was a little unusual in that it carried not only the usual things a teenage girl would normally. It also contained several 9mm magazines. Without looking, she said, 6.
"All right.
Just keep your ammo count in mind when this starts. You don't want to run out. Once Mel and the girls were in the house, I went to Danny's. I wanted to poke around in the armory we'd developed, which was now substantial. I remembered seeing a Springfield M1 and wanted it. I found the rifle in the closet and managed to find half a dozen magazines for it as well. I also picked up a Mossberg 500. It had a pistol grip stock and extended tube on it. A few more minutes of digging turned up an ammo can full of assorted buckshot. Taking the guns back to the house, I dumped the shells into my pack and gave the shotgun to Leanne. I want you to carry this in tonight. She looked at the scattergun.
I can't shoot this thing.
Laughing, I said, you won't have to. I just need you to carry it. This is our last-ditch effort defense if things really get hairy. In the kitchen, I filled the bladder in my pack from the Berkey filter and another 2-quart canteen as well. Then I filled a travel mug with tea for the ride. Going into the bathroom, I went through my medical stuff and added 2 Israeli bandages to the pack and a tourniquet. God forbid I had to use them. But if I needed them, there would be no substitute. Mel came in as I was putting stripper clips full of 5.56 ammo in the pack as well. She sat down on the bed. What's up? I asked.
I'm worried. This is really dangerous, and it's not just you. Leanne is going too.
She'll be with me, babe. I'll do my best to protect her. Hell, we may not even fire a shot. When those Apaches get done, there may not be anyone to stop.
Mel crossed her arms and gave me a disbelieving look.
You really think that?
I shrugged and half smiled.
It could happen.
Don't let her get hurt. We already have one daughter who's recovering. You too. You both better come home in one piece. She paused and closed her eyes. I just couldn't take it if something happened to one of you.
Sitting down in the bed beside her, I said, We will, I promise. I hoped I wasn't making a promise I couldn't keep. Going out, I sat on the couch beside Little Bit. She was combing the hair of a big plastic horse. Putting my hand on her head, I said, We're leaving, but we'll be back later, okay? She didn't look up at me, replying only with, Mm-hmm. I leaned over in front of her. I'm serious. We'll be back. She reached out and wrapped her arms around me. You have to come back. Holding her tight, I replied, I will, baby girl. I will. Standing up, I looked at Leanne. You ready? She looked down at herself and shrugged. Yeah, I guess. All right, then. Let's go. She went over to her mom and hugged her. Mel told her to be careful. And listen to your dad. Leanne smiled. I will. I promise. Then she surprised both Mel and me by going over to Little Bit and giving her a hug as well. They never were very close in the before, and had bickered often, but it seemed they were getting closer now, and it was incredible to witness. We left the house and headed down the road towards the bunker. It was dark, but I could see figures in the road. We walked quietly together. I was struck by just how calm she was about the whole thing. Looking over at her, all I could see was her outline. I said, You know, this isn't a game, kiddo. This is the real deal and will be very dangerous. She was very calm in her response. I know what we're about to do. People are going to die tonight. In the dark, I saw her turn towards me. We just have to kill more of them than they do of us. It was a striking statement from her. She really did get it and understood that we very well could lose people tonight. I put my arm around her as we walked the remaining short distance to the bunker. We were still waiting on a few people, so I decided to turn on the little radio and see if I could catch the broadcast tonight. Ted and Mike were messing with a couple of saws. There were 4 of them, lined up on top of the bunker. They would do most of the work for us tonight. Somehow, they managed to come up with another one. Made me wonder if Sheffield was missing a machine gun. I found static on the radio and checked my watch. The broadcast should start in about 5 minutes, so I set the radio down and went over to where the guys were working on the weapons. They both had headlamps on
and we're going through the machine guns.
These things ready to rock?
I asked. Mike looked up with a devilish grin.
Oh, yeah. Ready to rain hate and mayhem.
Nodding, I replied, it's going to be a long night of hate.
Ted stretched. These assholes have no idea what we're about to drop on them.
With a laugh, I said, do unto others before they do unto you. Sarge pulled up with Doc and Thad. Climbing out, Doc handed me a small strobe light.
Here, put this on the back of your vest. It's an IR so the Apaches can see us.
Good, 'cause friendly fire isn't, I said. Everyone arrived shortly after that. Danny looked nervous, and I asked if he was all right. He nodded,
yeah, I just want to get this over.
And that's just what we're going to do tonight, Sarge said. He looked around at the group.
This is going to be some scary shit, guys. Just keep your head. Don't panic. Do what we tell you to do, and you'll be fine.
Ted held up a couple of radios.
These are set to talk to the guards' radios and the helicopters. Stay off them, unless you see something we need to know about. Sarge's call sign is Swamp Rat. The guard is used to six, and the birds are Saber-1-1, and the general's call sign is Hefe.
Ted handed out the radios. There wasn't enough for every position, but he gave me one. Sarge looked around again.
Any questions?
When nobody said anything, he added,
don't worry, you'll all do fine. Let's load up.
As we were getting into the truck, the radio crackled to life with the nightly broadcast.
You're listening to John Jacob Schmidt, coming to you from the Radio Free Redoubt, broadcasting to all patriots in occupied territory and those of you outside the wire. We have a mixed bag tonight, folks. On the good side, the Marines have pushed federal forces from their positions around Atlanta. However, it came at a price. The once beautiful city of Atlanta is now in ruins. The attacking Marines were forced to use heavy artillery to dislodge the defenders. And out of pure spite, the feds torched great swaths of the city. The fires are still burning as I speak. Now, sadly, the bad news. We need to be vigilant, folks. We know now for a fact that advanced elements of both the Russian and Chinese forces are here. These advanced units are lightly armed and have no support. If you see them, get a message out somehow. The more of them we can eliminate now, the better we'll be. If your group has the means, take them out. These are invaders. I know that sounds weird. The kind of thing we here in the greatest country on earth never imagined. But it's here now.
A woman's voice came over the radio. Patriots, prepare for a message. The oak tree is on fire. The oak tree is on fire. As soon as I heard that, I looked at Danny.
Hey, man, write down the number she's about to say.
Danny grabbed a piece of paper from the glove box and got ready. Just in time, too, because the numbers came quickly. 54342, 54163, 93366, 67696, 60395, 95689, 64805, 72476, 61595, 63917, 26705, 74223, 50388, 68029, 39765, 38995, 98247, 88120, 79699, 18962, 37562, 92226, 87579. Please share this information with anyone in the affected area.
I was following behind Sarge and the guys who were in his two buggies. We were driving blacked out, which was strange for me because I wasn't used to driving with NVGs. I turned the radio off to concentrate. Plus, I was nervous as hell. We were heading down Highway 42. The intent was to come at them from the back, approaching from the north,
where there were no roads that went directly to the camp. The guard was also on the move. A convoy of trucks stretched down Highway 19 coming out of Eustace, headed north to Umatilla. There, they would take 450 to the west and approach the main gate of the camp. During their recon, Mike and Ted noted the lack of any sort of roadblock at the entrance. There were defensive positions on either side, but the road was wide open. The guard would take advantage of this fact. On a dark stretch of Highway 42, Sarge stopped. I pulled up beside him. He pointed off to the south.
Here's where we go in. Get your truck off the road and get everyone out. We've got to distribute the load and head for the rally point.
I pulled the truck off the road and parked it under some large oak trees where everyone got out. The buggies would be driven a little closer, but even they would be abandoned shortly. We put as many people on them as we could, but Thad, Danny, Eric, and I ended up walking. It wasn't hard to keep up, though, because they were going slow in the brush. Not to mention, we had to cut a couple of fences. It was not the stealthiest approach, but after tonight, it wouldn't matter one way or the other. Either they'd be gone, or we would. At the point the buggies were to be abandoned, we distributed the load. There was the mortar and its ammunition, and the saws and their ammo. Mike had the goose as well. There was a lot of hardware, and it was impressive to know we had that sort of weaponry. I was carrying my carbine and the M1. Leanne had her H&K and the shotgun. But we all had to carry more. I was saddled with one of the saws and thought about leaving the carbine. But it wasn't far to our positions, and I wanted every gun I could get my hands on. Were we walking farther, I certainly wouldn't hump all this shit. Once everything was sorted out, Sarge turned to the group.
All right, guys, shit's about to get real. Absolutely no talking from here on. Move quietly and try not to make any noise. Our positions are on the edge of the camp, so we'll be kind of far away. But we don't want to give them any warning.
Ian and Ted led the way. Ian carried his saw as well. They would range ahead and make sure we didn't walk into an ambush. I took a position at the rear of the column, keeping Leanne with me. From my position, I could see all the IR strobes that were with each team. They flashed randomly, providing fleeting glimpses of the canopy of trees we were walking under. These quickly gave way to a large marsh. Thankfully, it had been pretty dry lately, so we weren't wading through muck to get there. At the edge of the marsh, we paused, everyone taking a knee. Sarge would come get one team at a time and take them to their position, then return to get another. Eventually, he got to me and Leanne and led us to our position. It was in a small depression with a slight rise in front of it. From where we were, though, I could see most of the backside of the camp. It was a good spot. Sarge knelt down beside me.
All right, Morgan. When the show starts, it's open season. We want to prevent any of them getting out of this side of the camp, so anyone you see out there is a target.
Roger that, I replied, as I set my pack on the ground. He patted my back and disappeared. I looked down along the edge of the marsh and could see strobes flashing. I really hope these guys don't have any NVGs. I pulled the two-quart canteen out and laid it between Leanne and me.
Here's some water if you need it, I whispered. She nodded, and I said, Your weapon is for close work. Don't waste it trying to shoot across this field. I'll try and stop them farther out. But if anyone tries to make a break for it and crosses that field, you take them out.
In a quiet whisper, she replied, Okay. I checked my watch. It was 3 a.m. It had taken some time to get everyone in place. The show would start soon. We were waiting for the appearance of the Apaches to start the party. I took the time to observe the camp. There was very little movement. I saw a couple of pairs of what had to be security walking around. That meant everyone else was more than likely asleep, which was good. If those Apaches could take out the cabins with them still inside, it would make our life a lot easier.
When is this going to start? Leanne whispered.
I don't know.
You tired?
A little. I was excited walking in here. Now I'm getting tired.
I patted her back. That's the way it works, kiddo. Go ahead and sleep while you can. I'll wake you up when it's time. She pushed her weapon out of the way and laid her head on her hands.
Okay, wake me up.
Whispering, I replied, I don't think that will be a problem. I sat quiet for a long time. So long, I started questioning if this were going to happen or not. I'm not a patient person, and sitting like this was killing me. Not to mention, your ears play tricks on you. And I was forever looking behind me for a guy I knew was sneaking up on me, only to see nothing. Then, there was the unmistakable sound of something coming through the brush. There was no mistaking it this time. I tapped Leanne on the shoulder. When she opened her eyes, I held a finger to my lips and pointed to the thin line of brush behind us. I crawled around so I was facing the sound and searched the bush for any movement. The sound was getting louder, crunching and scraping. I picked up the mossberg and trained the sight out in front of me. Then, as if materializing out of thin air, a damn armadillo wandered out of the brush just 10 feet from me. I hate armadillos and kill every one of them I find, usually. Leanne smiled, and I said, It's your lucky day, bud. Leanne cupped her mouth to keep from laughing. I held my finger to my lips again and pointed for her to turn around. With the radios came a small earbud. As I picked up the M1 again, it crackled.
Jefe to all units, put your heads down. Saber is inbound.
I couldn't hear the helicopters and wondered how far away they were. I should be able to hear them. Then came a faint thumping. They sounded really far. The radio crackled again.
Saber 1-1. Swamp Rat. We've marked your strobes. Gun runs will be from the north to the south and west to east. Make yourselves small, people.
I still could only hear a faint thumping. How far can the optics on one of those things see? The question was answered when I saw a small flash speeding towards the camp. It hit one of the cabins and erupted into a massive explosion. I looked at my watch. It was 4:12 a.m.
Oh my God, Leanne said, a little too loud.
I shushed her and tried to push myself a little farther into the hole. What followed was a rocket coming in every few minutes. The camp was now fully awake and people were running around. With a target-rich environment in front of me, I started to aim at the figures running around in front of the flames. I would save the machine gun ammo for when they were running towards me. For now, they were backlit by the numerous fires beginning to burn around the camp. Then, the Apaches opened up with their cannons. It was a mesmerizing display as the large rounds slammed into the ground. Lying on my stomach as I was, I could feel the impacts. I took aim on a figure and pulled the trigger, and was stunned when the shadow exploded before my eyes. Several more 30-millimeter rounds slammed into the ground around the now disintegrated body. No matter, I just picked another one. The helicopters continued their work, and then the sound of a large number of small arms entered the fight.
Eustace is through the gate, the radio crackled.
It was now fully on. I glanced down the line and saw sporadic fire coming from some of our positions. Red tracers would race out from our line in short bursts. Then, off to my right front, there was another large explosion. I could see men falling out the back of a burning truck. After a moment, there was a large, bright yellow flash. Thick flames shot high into the sky, and even in the darkness, I could see the intensely thick, inky black cloud of smoke rising into the pre-dawn sky. The camp's occupants were caught completely off guard and were obviously not prepared for what happened. As the guard pushed farther into the camp occupants started to panic and run. And they ran straight towards us. I dropped the M1 and got behind the saw. We were the last ones on our line, so it was important for me to keep anyone from getting around. Snugging the weapon to my shoulder, I squeezed the trigger. I fired 7 or 8 round bursts at the figures running towards me. They fell like grass before a scythe. All down our line now, everyone was firing. Now it was a continuous steady stream of red tracers. The sound was intense. It was so damn loud. But when the radio crackled again, I heard the call.
Saber 1-1 is Winchester. Saber 1-2 is Winchester. Hefe, Swamp Rat.
Go for Swamp Rat.
Sarge's voice came over the radio with the sound of heavy automatic weapon fire in the background.
Swamp Rat, you've got Tangos maneuvering to the east. We'll come over and hit them with the door guns.
Roger that, Hefe. Morgan, you see them?
I pulled the NVGs back down over my eyes and looked to my right. There were about a dozen people running from the attack. I don't think I'd call it maneuvering, but they were certainly moving. I moved Leanne out of the way and shifted the weapon, opening up on them. Then I heard the Blackhawk come in, and a gunner up there turned a minigun loose on them as well. It was hellish. We cut all of them down. The sound of the minigun and stream of tracers made me think of some heavenly demon opening his mouth and vomiting fire and death down onto those below. The sound, the sight, it was truly terrible. The last one to fall hit the ground and tried to get back up. I stopped that with a burst to his chest. With that, my end of the line went quiet. I saw no other figures. The radio crackled again with a terrifying message.
We're being overrun!
It was Dalton, and while he was certainly excited, he was calm and spoke clearly. With only four teams on the line, our positions were a couple hundred yards apart, plenty of room for people to sneak through. Keying my radio, I said, "Our end is quiet. We're moving to support Danny and Dalton." I took a minute to add the last belt of ammo to the one trailing out of the saw. Then I told Leanne to follow me. We ran along the marsh looking for Danny and Dalton. I heard them before I saw them. I could hear Dalton shouting, screaming at the top of his lungs. Then their position came into sight. It was above us on the crest of a small hill. I could clearly see Dalton standing up and firing. Coming up to the top of the hill, I was shocked to see so many people rushing towards them. I told Leanne to shoot and drop to the ground to get the saw into the fight. Something must have happened to theirs as it was quiet. We started on the back of the group and made short work of them. The front part of the group made it to their position and quickly devolved into hand-to-hand fighting. I was trying to cover them, but couldn't fire because they were mixed up. I told Leanne to stay put and grabbed the shotgun and took off running. Dalton was swinging his AK like a club, holding it by the barrel. Danny was on his back firing his pistol point-blank into them. Dalton hit a man in the head and snapped the stock off his weapon. He didn't miss a beat. Pulling his kukri from its sheath and snatching the tomahawk from where it was tucked into his belt, the first poor soul to encounter him was hacked up immediately. Dalton used the hawk to hook the man's arm and pull it out of the way and force him off balance. He then smashed the head of the hawk into his face and drove the kukri up under his ribs and into his chest. The man was done. Kicking the body off his blade, Dalton hoisted the edged weapons over his head and screamed,
"Men and lads, wet your edges on me!"
Like some sort of psycho. He then charged headlong into them. I was running towards him, firing the shotgun as fast as I could. Danny was now back on his feet and had his carbine working. I was reloading the Mossberg when a body slammed into me, sending both of us crashing to the ground. I looked up to see a wild-eyed, bearded man scrambling for the shotgun. He would get to it before I did. Then, as the sky was beginning to lighten to the coming dawn, I recognized him. It was Billy. I went to draw my pistol, and it wasn't there. I groped at the empty holster and looked at it in disbelief. Then I remembered the hawk Dalton gave me. Snatching it from my vest, I crawled after Billy. He was about 2 feet from the Mossberg when I slammed the head of the hawk into his calf. He howled in pain, but his screaming reached a new level when I took a double-handed grip on the hickory handle of the hawk and pulled him back towards me. but I didn't think that out all the way, and he smashed a bare foot into my nose, breaking it. I lost my grip on the hawk as my head spun and my eyes watered. Rolling onto my back, I looked over to see Billy trying to get to his feet. He was close to me, so I pulled the SE from its sheath and slammed it into the top of his foot. He howled again as he fell, knocking the hawk free. Picking it up with my free hand, I sank the knife into his thigh and used it for a grip to drag myself over to him. He was screaming in pain and flailing at me. I swung the hawk at his hands. It hit his right hand between the third and fourth finger, nearly cleaving it in half. He screamed again as he held the mangled appendage up before him. I climbed on top of him, straddling him. Looking down at him, blood ran from my nose and onto his face. He took a swing at me with his left that I easily dodged. Not wanting to give him another chance, I screamed as I brought the hawk back over my head. "I told you I'd fucking kill you!" Billy's eyes went wide as the piece of forged iron arched down towards him, slamming into his forehead. I wrenched it free and hit him again and again. I was covered in blood, mine and his. Breathing heavily, I pulled the hawk from his destroyed head. A pair of boots came into view, and I looked up to see Dalton with a garish smile on his face, tomahawk in one hand and kukri in the other, both dripping blood. He wiped blood from his face with the back of his hand and said, "Fun, ain't it?" As I tried to get up, I replied, "I don't know about fun." He offered me a hand and pulled me to my feet. Once on my feet, I noticed the shooting had died down. There was still sporadic fire in the camp, but it all seemed to be concentrated in one area. I could hear faint radio chatter, very faint, and realized the earbud had been knocked from my ear. I put it back in my ear as I searched for my pistol, finding it not far from where Billy and I had collided. I caught the end of Sarge saying to rally at the swimming pools. I looked around at the bodies on the ground and checked on Danny. He was on the ground, fumbling with a bandage. Kneeling down, I asked, "What's wrong?" "Something hit my shoulder." Dalton was there quickly as well and ripped open Danny's shirt. There was a small hole just below the collarbone. Dalton and I got him wrapped up and onto his feet. "Can you move?" Dalton asked. "Yeah, just hand me my rifle." I handed him his carbine and smiled. "Let's go finish this." He shook his head. "You look like shit." I laughed. "You should see the other guy." Leanne handed me the M1. I slung it over my back and picked up the saw. The four of us made our way over to the pools where everyone else was waiting. When Sarge saw us, he was surprised. "Holy shit! What the hell happened to you guys?" "I ran into Billy, and Danny took a round to his shoulder," I replied. Doc quickly checked Danny out while Sarge looked at my nose. He grabbed it and moved it back and forth. It was like fire shooting through my head. "Damn it, that hurts!" I shouted as I slapped his hand away. Sarge giggled. "Yeah, that's broke for sure." "Thank you for the stunning report, Captain Fucking Obvious." Doc said Danny would be all right for now and turned his attention to Dalton. "The hell happened to you? There's blood everywhere. Are you hit? You hurt anywhere?" Dalton waved him off. "I'm good, Doc. All my blood's still on the inside. None of this is mine." Doc stepped back and asked, "What the hell happened?" I stabbed my thumb at Dalton. "Conan here went all medieval on a bunch of them." Looking at me, Dalton replied, "I wasn't the only one." "You finished Billy boy?" Sarge asked. "Yeah. He's not going to be bothering anyone else." "I'd say so," Dalton shouted. "You hacked his head to pieces. I've split logs with fewer swings." Sarge looked around. "Anyone else got any boo-boos?" Everyone looked themselves over and shook their heads. "All right, this is almost over.
There's a group holdup over here in the gymnasium. All of the remaining combatants here have to be rooted out. And after it gets light out, every building has to be cleared. The guard is working on that gym, so we can all take a quick rest and wait for daylight. We all sat down on the chairs by the pool. It was kind of strange to be sitting on a lounge chair beside a pool. But instead of coolers and floats, we had automatic weapons at our side. Of course, this pool was a green swamp, but it still looked like a pool. Mike made it to the pool and flopped onto a chair. Looking at Sarge, he said, "You made me hump that damn mortar in here, and you didn't even use it?" "We didn't need it. Better that way. We still have the ammo." Mike shook his head. "Didn't need it?" "Oh, dry up. Better we have it and not need it than need it and not have it." Jess brushed her hair from her face and said, "That was easier than I thought it would be." Looking over, I replied, "Speak for yourself." "Eric killed like 6 people," Fred said proudly. "Shit, you ain't even limited out yet," Sarge barked. Doc came over and knelt down in front of me. "Let me see that nose." I tilted my head back and said, "You pinch it, and yours will look like mine." He laughed. "I ain't gonna pinch it." Yeah, he didn't pinch it in the proper sense, but he mashed it around, and it hurt like hell. He looked in my nose with a small light and asked, "Can you breathe all right?" I nodded. "Yeah, it just feels like it's full of snot." "That's blood, not snot. And don't try to blow it out. Let the clot stay there for now." In his oh-so-polite way, Sarge said, "You're gonna look like shit tomorrow." I shook my head. "Yeah, well, this will get better. What's your excuse?" As the sun began to break the horizon, we were able to see more around us. It was a ghastly scene. There were bodies lying everywhere. The imagery was compounded by the smell of the burning structures, trucks, and the unmistakable smell of burning fuel, mixed in and nearly overpowered by the other odors, but still there, was the iron-like smell of blood and raw meat. People just aren't prepared for what this really looks like. It isn't like in the movies. I could see it on our people now. Leanna was looking around. She was pinching her nose and had a disgusted look on her face. Fred, so proud a moment ago about Eric's body count, was now bent over getting sick. Eric was patting her back as she retched. Then there was Thad. He was dealing with it by not looking. He stared at the ground at his feet. Mike and Ted were oblivious to it all. They were actually eating a biscuit that Mike pulled from his pack, as though nothing happened, and it was just another day. I looked in the direction of the group the door gunner and I had taken down. They were scattered over a grassy area on a slight slope. They were over 100 yards away, and I got up and started to walk towards them. Something drew me towards them. The closer I got, the more clearly I could see them. I was struck by what I was seeing. I stopped in front of the one I'd shot trying to get up. Kneeling down, I brushed the girl's hair out of her blood-splattered face. She was young, I'd say 16 or so. She wore only a t-shirt and her underwear. She was a pretty girl, and now she was dead. Looking the group over, there were several other women, though thankfully, this was the youngest. All were barely dressed, and all of them were barefoot. Some of the bodies were chewed to pieces, having caught the full wrath of the door gunner. The image of that red stream of death coming down amongst them returned to me. I could remember seeing them in the NVGs, but I didn't recall seeing women. Had I realized that, I have to wonder if I would have had it within me to shoot them. But in the moment, that's not what I saw. I was surveying the scene when Sarge's voice came over my shoulder. "These the ones that were maneuvering around you?" Shaking my head, I replied, "They weren't maneuvering. They were running for their fucking lives, and I shot them." We stood in silence for a moment. I was staring at the side of the girl's face. Her eyes were open, but
but it was very obvious there was no life in them. When a person dies, the eyes lose that gleam, that light. There was no light in any of the eyes of these people. Looking at the girl, I wondered what those eyes had seen. What kind of good, what kind of fun times she'd seen in her life. On the other side of that coin was the thought of what sort of horrors they'd seen. And to know that the last thing they saw was the muzzle flash from the machine gun with me behind it was too much. Tears started to run down my face. I was supposed to be helping people, saving them from this very sort of horror. And here, now, there was no way to deny the fact that I was the one to perpetrate the very horror I think I'm preventing. Sarge stepped up beside me. After a moment, I heard him take a deep breath. Morgan, when you saw these people in the dark, running, what did you think? I looked at him. He was looking at the bodies. What do you mean? He looked at me, and there was a softness to him. Sarge was always a little rough around the edges, crusty in a dry dog turd kind of way. A product of a lifetime spent in the service of his country. When he wasn't pissed off, he was usually fucking with you. But now, I could tell he was being sincere. In the dark, when you looked down the barrel of that weapon, what did you see? I looked at the broken and bent bodies again. I didn't see a group of women and girls fleeing for their lives. Sarge stepped around in front of me and looked directly into my eyes. I know you didn't see that, Morgan. If you had, you'd have never pulled the trigger. Hell, I wouldn't have pulled the trigger. But I didn't ask what you didn't see. I asked what you did see. I tried to look past him, but he sidestepped, staying right in front of me and staring into my eyes. I thought about the question. I closed my eyes and saw it again, plain as day. I saw a group of people running. Where were they running? They were running for the bush. Did you think there was a damn good chance they had weapons? Again, I thought about the question. I remembered pushing Leanne out of the way and moving the weapon. I remembered falling behind it and the red tracers speeding away from me. I remembered the demonic tracers from the minigun. At that moment, I certainly thought they had weapons. I nodded my head and wiped away the increasing tears running from my eyes. Yes. And had those armed people gotten past you, do you think your friends, your daughter, could have been killed? Rocking my head to the side, I shrugged. Well, yeah. Sarge put his hands on my shoulders, and I opened my eyes. He was still looking straight into mine, and I was surprised to see what could have been the beginning of tears in his eyes. Morgan, what you did was what anyone would have done. Do you think all those guys that come back from combat overseas have PTSD from being shot at? That's only a small part of it, friend. Hell, that's a release. I've been shot at in more countries than I can remember. What sticks with you is this shit. He stepped aside and pointed at the bodies. This is the shit that wakes you up at night. This is the kind of shit that gives you nightmares. I know what you're thinking. I know you're thinking about your girls. He knelt down and gently closed the girl's eyes. Looking back up at me, he said, I am too. He stood up and put his arm around me and pulled me around, away from the carnage. The moles that have never seen combat call this collateral damage. That's bullshit from assholes that have never smelled cordite. Blood, piss, and shit. This will stay with you forever. He looked at me. And it should. You shouldn't forget. It would be a dishonor to the people that lost their lives here. But you need to understand that at the time, at that moment when you pulled the trigger, you did it for a reason bigger than yourself. I'd managed to get control of myself as I thought of what he was saying. He was right, after all. I didn't do it out of maliciousness. I wasn't bloodthirsty or wanting to inflict unnecessary pain or misery.
but that really didn't make it any easier to live with. I know what you're saying. It makes sense. I tried to turn back. I was going to point at those poor souls, but Sarge held me tight and wouldn't let me. But it doesn't change the fact that those people are dead because of me.
Don't look back, son. What's done is done. And I know you're holding yourself responsible for it all. But you have to remember, there was a door gunner up there with a minigun, and he was raining some serious hell down on them.
As we made our way back to the group, I replied,
true, but that girl, she was hit and went down. She tried to get up, and I finished her. She's totally on me.
Sarge's hand gripped my neck.
Son, what's done is done. Nothing you can do will ever